It's about this kind of activity that we do, this meditation activity. No deep thoughts or profound stuff. I just like to talk about the ordinariness of this practice and how we can connect to it on that level. I've talked about this topic a while back here, and just recently also talked at Santa Cruz Zen Center about it. So it's kind of a theme that's been with me for a while. I think it's difficult for us because we're expectant or of something more or something better, or maybe we're even ambitious for a better person or a better experience or a different experience or a different self to be experienced, to come forward. So it's difficult for us to, it's difficult for us to do this work, because basically the work of meditation is to come home to body and mind just as they are, to consciousness or awareness or presence or mind, just as it is, just as it's sort of the package we've been delivered, so to speak, and our body as well, and our presence or our body, to come back home to that and to thoroughly accept it. That's the work of meditation. And it's often gets, I don't want to say corrupted, it gets distracted by a view that there's a better place, a better person, a different state of mind, a realized existence, a bliss realm, let's say, or a kind of understanding, a kind of new hit of wisdom, something else, in other words, than what's right before you, what is really happening. So we give ourselves assignments, we make a meditation a kind of project, and so get distracted from really coming home to where we are and what we are and who we are. So I mentioned this case before. It's case 19 from the Mumon Khan. A case is a kind of a little story or a little vignette, a little teaching story that comes from the Zen and Chan tradition. This one is between Zhao Zhou and Nan Chuan, or in a Japanese translation, it's Joshu and Nan Sen. So Joshu asked Nan Sen, "What is the way? What is the way?" Joshu, by the way, Joshu became a very famous teacher in his own right, and but at this point he was a beginning student, and Nansen was his teacher, the teacher he was coming to meet. And Nansen heard that question, "What is the way?" Sounds like a pretty mundane question, like, "How's it going?" Or, you know, "How are you feeling?" Basically, it's a very general question. But actually, it's kind of everything. It's like, what's going on? What is the way? Nansen said, "Ordinary mind is the way. Ordinary mind is the way." Sometimes it's translated as everyday mind, or mind as it is the way. Joshu said, "Shall I try for that? Or shall I turn toward it?" Nansen said, "You can, but if you try for it, you'll be separated from it." Joshu said, "How can I know the way unless I try for it?" Nansen said, "The way is not a matter of knowing or not knowing. Knowing is delusion, is conceit, is concept, is acquisition. And not knowing is simply ignorance, stupidity, delusion." And then Nansen said to Joshu, he said, "Just reach beyond your doubt. Reach beyond this question and of knowing or not knowing. And it will open vast like the sky. And there will be no yes or no." So that's it. I'm done. Any questions? No, not yet. Don't ask questions yet. Here's another translation. I actually like this one a little bit better. One day, Zhao Zhou asked Nan Kuan. They're using the Chinese names here. Zhao Zhou asked Nan Kuan, "What is the way?" Nan Kuan said, "Everyday mind is the way." Zhao Zhou said, "Does it have a disposition?" An interesting translation. Does it have a disposition? Disposition means, does it have a, is it disposed to be this way or that way? Does it have preferences? Does it have a disposition? Nan Kuan said, "If it has the slightest intention, that is intention to be this way or that way, to have preferences, if it has the slightest intention, then it is crooked." Zhao Zhou said, when a person has no disposition, how can he know that this is the way?" That's a legitimate question, right? Nan Kuan said, "The way is not subject to knowledge, nor is it subject to no knowledge. Knowledge is delusive. No knowledge is nihilistic. When the uncontrived way is really attained, it is like great emptiness, vast and expansive. So how could there be, how could there be a baneful right or wrong? And then it goes on to say, at these words, Zhao Zhou was awakened. And later on, Zhao Zhou, after his ordination, became a disciple, had transmission with Nanquan, and continued his lineage thread. Ordinary. So let's look at that together. Ordinary mind is the way. Sounds too accessible, doesn't it? Sounds too easy. Not easy particularly, but doesn't sound like there's any Buddhist candy there. Sounds like we have to any great deep wisdom or any kind of special state. Rather, the way in, the way as it's functioning, is just this mind, my mind, my body, your mind, your body. This consciousness, this package of self that I'm carrying around, this little well-constructed and maintained embodiment of being is the way. This ordinary mind that includes all the trouble and mess that I get into, all the delusion that I have, is that the way? That's kind of a big thing to eat, isn't it? But on the other hand, what else do we have to work with? You know, what else is there? Except what's at hand, what's actually at hand, which is this body and this mind, this consciousness, this personal history, these karmic predilections. Kokyo reminded me in Santa Cruz that this phrase, ordinary mind is the way, is actually was coined by a nonsense teacher, Basho, or Master Ma, was a teacher of nonsense. And that Master Ma said, ordinary mind is the mind of no preferences. Ordinary mind is the mind of no picking and choosing. Ordinary mind is the mind of no attaching and no averting. So here's another perspective, because if I would say, what is ordinary mind, I might include all that stuff. How about you? Would you include that in your repertoire of ordinary mind? Yeah. So this is a different take on what ordinary mind is. Maybe ordinary mind in the sense of, as we might interpret it, as natural mind, or mind before construction, before construction of own being, or before sometimes Dogen talks about it like a backward step, or behind the behind the construction of a self. Or you might call it the basis, the base, the ground, or the base before all this proliferation of own being, svabhava. In Zen terminology, we have this term, shikan. You've heard this term, shikantaza. People heard that term, shikantaza. It means to just. Usually, it's translated as just, or just for itself, or for. Just for itself, not for any. Not for anything else, but just for itself. So shikan taza means to meet sitting, or to know sitting, or to actually literally, I think it means to hit the sitting practice, to meet the sitting practice. And shikan means to meet the sitting practice just as it is, or just for itself, or don't try and make it a project or an assignment to get better, or to have a nice experience. Don't try and employ it, but let it be just for itself. That's shikan, shikan. Shikan means only, or also means wholeheartedly, means thorough and wholeheartedly, thorough sitting. Wholehearted sitting just for itself, the experience just for itself. This isn't a unknown experience for us. I mean, we, even though we intrude in a lot of our experiences, we know we've had experiences where we're just completely present. The thing is kind of doing itself. The sitting is the zazen, is sitting zazen, and or walking is just walking, or seeing the beautiful view is just seeing the beautiful view. We got out of the way. We didn't intrude, and it was just for itself. It was just doing its thing, or we were just doing its thing. We were just it, you could say. It's not an uncommon experience, shikan. And it's what is called the purest form of practice. There's some forms of meditation and practice, it's called a applied meditation, where you apply. It's like having an assignment in school. You're given an assignment, or you're given a project, and you go toward that goal, and you try and meet that goal. You try and calm your mind, or you try and or you focus on a certain topic, and try and relate to that topic. That's applied meditation. But shikantaza has no form, it has no agenda, it has no particular marks or characteristics, and because it has no particular marks or characteristics, means that anything that happens, anything that comes forward, any state of mind, any awareness, is your topic. So it's pretty dangerous, actually, because it's everything, and it's nothing, too. One time, some time ago, I heard a talk by a really good Buddhist scholar and teacher, Okamura Roshi. Okamura Roshi has the same his, one of his teachers was the same teacher of Kobunshina Roshi, Kotosawaki. Kobunshina Roshi practiced with Kotosawaki when he was young, and that's the grandfather of Okamura. And Okamura, talked a little bit about this topic. He said that often we have what's called a merchant's mentality about a lot of things, but we bring it into our practice as well. We come into our practice with a merchant's mind. In other words, we want to, sometimes a thief's mind too. You know, we want to steal something, we want to, but more often it's kind of a merchant's mind. We want to make a deal. We want to, okay, I'm going to sit down and I'm going to face the wall, and I'm going to be a good boy and girl, and I'm going to practice my meditation, and I'm going to get fill in the blank. I'm going to get peaceful, I'm going to get wise, I'm going to get better. If you look at that closely, if you look at that kind of mind closely, that's a merchant's mind. That's a mind that wants to buy. You put in your time and you get a product. Okamura told a story of, it was from Meister Eckhart. He told the story of Meister Eckhart, recounting from the Bible the story of Jesus coming into the temple. And the temple, at that time, the temple life has been, it was not in very good shape. And the temple was full of merchants. It had little stands, and things were being sold, maybe religious objects or something. I don't know what. But anyway, Jesus came into the temple, and he saw that it was open for business, basically. The temple was open for business. And Jesus was, well, I have this image of Jesus as being a really peaceful, calm guy. But in this instance, the story goes, Jesus like totally lost it, and he went ballistic. He got really pissed off, and he got some sticks, and he just drove the money lenders and the merchants out of that temple. And he just cleaned the house, and he said the temple should be empty. This temple is sacred. The temple should be empty. It should not be open for business. And Meister Eckhart said, this temple is our mind. This temple is not just the physical temple in Jerusalem a long time ago, the temple that we need to clear out the money lenders and the merchants out of our, we need to drive them ruthlessly out of our minds, out of our consciousness, and be free and have a open mind, an empty mind, a mind that's actually available to receive not only the people that come to worship, but actually enough room to receive the voice of God, the place. It should be an appropriate place for God to meet man and meet the person. And it was too full. at that time. It was too crowded. So Okamura said, just as Jesus drove out the moneylenders and the merchants from the temple, we need to release, to let go of, to not attend to and sometimes ruthlessly drive out the bargainer, the merchant in our practice, and drop it and become empty of that kind of deal making and just sit with whatever arises. In other words, thoroughly accept this body and this mind as it is. Start there. When I was a young man and was practicing with Koban, he gave me an assignment. He gave me an assignment. I talked about assignments. Sorry. He gave me an assignment of studying the Platform Sutra of the Sixth Patriarch, Wei Nang's Platform Sutra. And I haven't studied it. I'm sorry. But I recently tried to read it again. I have trouble reading it, and except for the biography, I like his biography. That's fun. But you know the introductory biography, sure, tells, sure, that story. Sure. Yeah. But I tried to read it recently, and there's the one phrase stuck with me, and it. It's called One Practice Samadhi. So Hongzhi says, Wei Nang says, One Practice Samadhi means at all times, whether walking, standing, sitting, or lying down, always practice with a straightforward mind. That's all. It sounds too simple, but it really struck me, what is a straightforward mind? A straightforward mind, I thought a straightforward mind is this, it wouldn't be a merchant's mind, would it? That would be a mind that's sort of was negotiating, trying to make a deal. A straightforward mind would be a mind that just met whatever was available to be met, straight on, right? A straightforward mind might be genuinely curious about what it was meeting, interested, actually. What else? There wouldn't be any kind of deviation, like there wouldn't be a sense of going somewhere else, getting distracted. You'd actually attend to what you were meeting, actually be present for what you were meeting. Also, I think if you had a straightforward mind, you would you'd bring to the situation, to the meeting of what you were meeting, you'd bring to it kind of energy or vitality. You know, you wouldn't come to meet something straightforward in a kind of sleepy quality or spaced out quality, right? Hello. You bring the energy of your life to it, the energy of the moment to it. Ordinary mind is the way. Is that lunch?
I think it's the other group. I don't know, can anybody see who's in it? No.
Is it time?
Yeah, it's 12:30.
Have I been talking all this time? Straightforwardly?
Way in the stomach.
Gee, I just got started. Is there anything, would someone like to comment, or is there anything else?
Oh, just one question.
Yeah.
Straightforward, you're thinking of a forward look. You're not thinking about the past and what happened to you. And,
yeah, yeah.
You know, negotiating
yeah.
your
yeah.
position where you were, and how you're going to project that. Kind of straight on and looking at what's coming to you.
Yeah. Yeah, and you wouldn't necessarily be carrying a preconception of what you were coming to meet, in the sense that it would obstruct what you were seeing or meeting. Yeah. Did you have something?
Yeah, yeah. Question. So, when practicing meditation, are we actively keeping the temple clean?
It sounds like an assignment, doesn't it? is that what you're...
Sounds like an assignment.
Yeah.
But how do we keep the mind empty?
Anyone like to answer that? The mind fundamentally is pure. The mind is fundamentally empty. It is capable to harm that basic purity or to obstruct it. I would say, I think there's a lot of answers to that question, and it's an important question, and it is our work. I would say return to body and mind as they are, and start where you are, start at the beginning. That is the basic purity. It's very hard for us to completely accept ourselves as we are. But where else do we begin? Provisionally, in meditation, we have this situation where we set up what you might call an artificial situation or a deliberate situation. So we face a wall, so we don't have much visual distraction. We sit still. We're animate beings. We're made to move, other than when we're sleeping. So we're made to move, but we set up the situation where we're still and we're quiet. So there's not talking. There's not conversation. So we set up a situation where we radically simplify. Our experience, and it gives us the opportunity. That situation in itself is no guarantee, but it gives us the opportunity to actually come home to body and mind, in other words, to ourselves, to come home to ourselves as we are. And if we do, sincerely or thoroughly or wholeheartedly come back to ourselves as we are. The proposition is, and my experiences and other people would confirm this as well, and the tradition confirms it, that experiences will be refreshing. In other words, like it will be restorative, it will be refreshing, and it will also be it in itself will be pure, and in that place there is shunyata, or emptiness, or the unifying unboundedness of existence right there. That was a big answer, sorry, I got carried away. Yeah. And lunch is waiting for us. Shall we wrap it up and eat? Yeah. Oh wait, before we dismiss, maybe we'll talk about this later, but don't forget that after lunch, there's we have our
Science and Buddhism
discussion.
Yeah.
Will it be here?
I think so, I think so, yeah.
Yeah. And what's the topic this week?
Just life.
Just life?
You
mean biology and...
biology and primarily our future, what's going to happen in terms of...
So if you can stick around, it's very interesting topics we've been talking about. Cliff is leading it. Cliff's the shuso for this time that's called a practice period. Anything, any other thing? Announcements? Sashin, no other announcements. Sashin, we're having Buddha's birthday Sashin. That's called Tanjue Sashin in about a week or so. Starts next Monday?
Next Monday night.
Wow.
A week from Monday.
A week from Monday. Yeah
from
not
tomorrow.
not tomorrow, but the week from Monday. It's a week of meditation, and you're welcome to come for part of it if you can't come for the whole thing. But if you do come for part of it and stay for meals, do call ahead, and so people know to prepare food. And then on the last day of that, of the session, there's a kind of party. It's called the Buddha's birthday party. That's on the last Sunday. We have a shuso ceremony where we get to grill this guy with questions, and also on Saturday we're gonna ordain that guy over there in priest ordination, but also on Sunday we're going to have a party, and it's we bathe the baby Buddha, and it's like a spring